Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Black Girl Nerds podcast. My name is Jamie. I'm your host. Hope you guys are amped up right now with that song. That was Straight Line Stitches, Never See the Day. Waving devil horns in the background. Guys, thank you so much for listening in. This is going to be a fantastic show. We've got two special guests that's going to talk about black women in the heavy metal industry. Before I get started on introducing our guests, I just want to make a couple of announcements, and then I'm going to go to our co-host. If you haven't already gone to blackgirlnerds.com, we are having a giveaway. So go to blackgirlnerds.com, and there's a free beauty giveaway from I Love Mimi products. There's lotions and body scrubs and lip glosses you can select from. So make sure you go and enter in for that contest giveaway. Also, another great special announcement. As you guys know, Black Girl Nerds has gained a lot of momentum since it was published last year. And effective next Sunday, Mother's Day, we are in collaboration with a site with five other female bloggers called She Thrives Network. So the She Thrives Network is going to cater to the new black woman. And we're all about showing our authentic selves in a myriad of ways. We have a fitness blogger, we have a hair blogger, a beauty blogger, a political blogger, a relationships blogger, and then Black Girl Nerds, me, will be featured on the website for the nerdy black girl. So definitely check out www.shethrives.com. blackgirlnerdspodcast@gmail.com and sign up now. You can go to the website. It hasn't launched, but you can sign up for email updates. All right, so let me go ahead and throw over to our co-hosts tonight. We have LaTanya and Ramon that will be with us to interview Lena Dawes and Ursula from HearEvil.com. LaTanya and Ramon, in that order, if you guys can just go ahead real quick and introduce yourself and also give your social network shout-outs as well.
Sure. I'm LaTanya, and I write for Black Girl Nerds. And I also have my own blog, which is sprinklesandbooze.com, and I also write for Afropunk. All my social media, everything, is on sprinklesandbooze.com, so definitely hit me up on Facebook, Twitter, wherever you wish. All right, that's it.
Well, it is I can do that tonight, and I'd be a total spaz, because we're doing metal, so I can talk with my death metal growl. You know what I'm talking about? Get hype, people. This is Black Girl Nerd. We're doing metal tonight. You can find me on Twitter, of course, The Ravolution. You can find me here in Atlanta, Georgia on 1420 AM while I'm talking about all the juicy ladies' issues, courtesy of YULradio.com. I know that's so bizarre. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. It was just a metaphor, people. A possible simile at best. Nevertheless, let's get this show a-rockin', shall we?
Awesomeness. All righty. So let's go ahead and introduce our special guest tonight. Ursula is from HearEvil.com. Ursula, who goes by the pen name She-Wolf, is a music critic and writer of the website Hear Evil News, the women's metal network. She's been a longtime hardcore fan of metal since she was young, and she eats, breathes, and lives on metal music. Our second guest is Lena Dawes. Lena is the author of the book, What Are You Doing Here? A Black Woman's Life and Liberation in Heavy Metal. She is a journalist. She has contributed to CBC Radio, Metal Edge, The Wire, AfroToronto.com, and BlogHer.com. She's also a cultural critic and photographer, and she lives in Toronto and has a personal blog called WritingIsFighting.com. Welcome, guys, Lena and Ursula, to the show.
Hey.
Awesome, awesome, girls. I'm so nervous tonight, so I'm really excited that you both are on to talk about heavy metal music. And I wanted to start with Lena because I read your book early this year, which completely blew me away. And I must admit that I was completely naive and even ignorant to the fact that there were Black women out there making metal music. You know, I was familiar with the alternative sounds from Fefe Dobson and artists like Rez, but I wasn't familiar that actual metal was being performed by Black women, front women like Alexis Brown of Straight Line Stitch. So for those who have not read the book, you definitely need to check it out. And I wanted to ask Lena real quick, that are people that are not familiar with the book, if you can just give us a brief summary of what Are You Doing Here is all about.
Okay, well, What Are You Doing Here is basically, well, I'll tell you what I did. That's the easiest thing. What I did was I interviewed several Black women fans, musicians, and industry workers in the metal, hardcore, and punk scenes. Took me about, I'd say about 4 years from the inception to the birth of the book, and basically asked them, like, you know, I started off with my experience. I've always been a metal fan since I was a kid, and, you know, getting older, there was all these questions I had about my, you know, my experiences in the scene, and I really wanted to find out if there was any other women who felt the same way and had to share the same experience as I did. So that's basically how the book came about, and then from talking to all these women, you know, some of the topics changed. Some things that I came to them and said, you know, what's it like being the only Black girl? What is the relationship you have when you see another Black person at a show? Things that were very simplistic to a lot of people ended up being really in-depth and really interesting and, you know, and really challenging. So it's, you know, it's very simple in terms of music is music, and, you know, especially, you know, these generations, my generation, the younger generations, we grow up, you know, with the ability to listen to tons of music, tons of different music. So why is it that Black people are only expected to listen to certain types of music? So that's
right.
where I basically started the book from, and it grew from there.
Has there been an increased interest in heavy metal music by women of color since your book was released?
I really don't know. I think that there's a lot of women coming out of the woodwork. There's a lot of women fans who might have not talked to anybody about their passion. They might have just kept it to themselves. I'm getting a number of emails and messages on Facebook and Twitter from women who are like, yeah, I thought I was the only one. And now that I've read your book, you know, they're willing to kind of get out there more and maybe start communicating with either finding out more Black women into the scene and kind of creating these alliances, or if they're a musician, if they're a journalist, if they're a photographer, they're willing to take the next step and start working within the scenes a little bit more aggressively. So I don't know if this book is necessarily going to change a non-metalhead to a metalhead, but I think that it has brought a lot of young women out, especially young women, who have been really reluctant because they've heard, oh, you think you're white and blah, 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 you know, whatever people say. They've been really reluctant to really talk about it.
Ursula, you're the you have the website called HearEvil.com that you write, and you basically critique and study different metal bands. I think you also tour with other metal bands. Can you tell us a little bit about what you do on Hear Evil News?
Sure. Like, most of what I do is, I guess, opinion pieces about being a woman specifically in the metal scene and sort of how that affects us. The last article I wrote was calling out a misogynist article that I saw on Gunshy Assassin. And
oh, God.
You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so I definitely want to bring stuff like that to the forefront. And there's not a super heavy emphasis on race, but I feel like there are a lot of commonalities in the experience that I like to touch on. So
what?
There's... Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say that most of it is opinions, but also there's the occasional album review, and I do have a column on there called Hail of the Week, where I talk about a band that's not super famous, like a local unsigned band that could use the exposure that I believe in. So
that's
what
awesome.
I do. It's a lot of fun.
What inspired you to create or write about heavy metal music? Where did that stem from?
Well, I loved metal for a very long time, and I loved journalism from a slightly shorter time, so I figured why not combine the two. You know, it was a lot of fun writing reviews, but I really wanted to focus on metal because there wasn't as much exposure, I felt, and because I knew about it and I really enjoyed it, it was easier for me to write about metal than it was to write about other genres.
Hey, this is a revolution real quick. This is for Ursula and Lena. We're talking about it. It was mentioned, but I kind of really want to pinpoint this and dive right into this topic here. Heavy metal, growing up being a fan since a very young age, very misogynistic. Women have, just in a general, women, and I believe you said that, Ursula, have never been taken serious in the genre. I mean, you go back to, you know, the various Heart was taken off stage in their first concert because they thought they were groupies, right? And if people even remember that they were like, hey, you guys get off the stage. You know, you guys are too pretty to be on stage. Like, you can't be Heart, you know. And so from Tawny Kantan, remember in the 80s, you know, everyone was on top of cars and jostling around, but you couldn't get the women to be taken out of the... what is it called in heavy metal? In hip-hop, it's with a video hoe. So what is it in metal? I don't know. Like, what is it in metal? But how does it feel to love something, like we said, race aside, how does it feel to love something that historically relegates you to, you know, only a certain class? How does that make you feel? As being as a fan on both ends and as a journalist.
Ursula, did you want to speak first, or?
It doesn't really matter much to me.
Okay, well, I'll just say a couple of things. I think that while you have, you mentioned Tawny Katane, and I remember that White Snake video, Here I Go Again, I think was the song. You have to remember that while there was Tawny Katane in North America, and we saw her on MTV writhing on top of a car, there was also Doro, who was in Germany, who back in the early 80s was the lead singer of, I think it was Warlock was the band. So while you do in North America, you've always had, especially during that hair metal era, there was a lot of questionable images in terms of women seen in these videos. You always did have women in the metal scene. Primarily, it was more European. You had Girls' School from England. You had Doro from Germany. Later on, you had Angela Gossow from Arch Enemy, who's still going strong. In terms of more of the folk or the pagan metal scene, there's always been women performers. So there's always been women out there, but from a North American perspective, most of us did see not only the video vixens that were in the hair metal bands, but there was also the stories about groupies like Pamela Desbarres that went back from into the 1970s, where she was hanging out with like the Rolling Stones or Led Zeppelin and all those bands and Aerosmith. So, but I think that for me, it never really bothered me, quite frankly. I think as a black woman, I knew that how I was perceived was different than the white woman. So even though that you saw the beautiful white women doing whatever, you know, in these videos, it didn't resonate with me at all. I wouldn't say it didn't bother me at all. I didn't accept it. I thought it was kind of dumb. But as a black woman, they did not represent who I was whatsoever. I think that one of the issues with being a black woman in metal is that, you know, there's always the, you always have to figure out, are you a woman first or are you black first?
Right.
Do you want to be defined
I'm
by
glad
your ethnicity or do you want to be defined by your lady parts? And that is always a struggle. I think that, you know, what my book is trying to do and what I'm trying to do as somebody in the scene now is say I'm both. But
yeah, I think you have to go that way.
Yeah, but for me growing up, honestly, I was more offended by what I saw in hip-hop videos in the 90s than I was in the metal scene, because I think that metal is also, it's a very hyper-masculine, blue-collar, aggressive music that was for men. And women have always been there, but it really was a music that was for that masculine, hard-working man. So I gravitated towards the music for the music. I gravitated towards it because it was aggressive, and that's what I like. So the women and seeing the videos or even some of the lyrical content, the questionable lyrical content, it would just seem so dumb to me, quite honestly, that it just never really, it never affected me really at all.
I also want to add that, you know, I liked the music for the music, but I was a bit younger when that kind of thing was happening and when it was really popular. So I didn't really see that going on until it was way too late for me to not be a metalhead anymore. So I was very much into it. And then later on, you know, in probably the mid-2000s even, is when I started seeing, like, VH1 classic videos with Tawny Katane and people like of that nature. So you know, I didn't have the option of thinking about it. And I'm sure that as a kid, I probably wouldn't have cared, and it probably wouldn't have made that much of an impact. But, you know, I love the music. So that was that.
Well, I have a question. Since the 80s, or as long as you can remember, really, Would you say that the role of women artists has changed in the music business industry at all? Like, do you think there needs to be more improvement? Do you think it's about the same? Do you think that there's still as hard of a struggle as there was, say, back in the 80s?
I would say yes and no. Yes, there still is a struggle. I mean, as Ursula mentioned before, you still have asshole journalists who are writing really misogynistic pieces, just doing it to get a rise out of people. So you still have people that have these archaic views. And, you know, I think as adults, we all know that people that hold those views have their own personal issues. So maybe that should not even be discussed. So I think that, yes, obviously we're still seeing that there is an issue, but there's also a lot of women, there's a lot of young women who are really into the metal scene as musicians, as industry workers, you know, working behind the scenes. There's more probably in the last generation, well, since the 80s, than there ever has been, and they're being taken seriously, and they're running things. There's a woman named Louise Brown from England. She's running a magazine called Iron Fist, and she used to be the editor-in-chief of Terrorizer, which is one of the UK's leading metal magazines and has been for almost, you know, at least over a decade. So
yeah,
there are more women in the scene. There's even a few more women of color working behind the scenes in the metal scene. But, you know, does there need to be improvement? Are we there yet? Certainly not. I'm seeing women at shows who are perpetrating the groupie stereotype. And there's a reason.
That's never going to go away.
Yeah.
I don't think that's ever going to go away.
Well, there's an issue because, you know, again, like a woman who wants to express her sexuality in the scene, if she wants to sleep with musicians, like, you know, go for it, you know, whatever. But I always do kind of wonder, are women still perpetrating these images because they feel like this is the only way they're going to be accepted?
Right.
So I don't really know, but I mean, that's what I'm seeing and that's what I'm kind of wondering in my head. But definitely I think that you are seeing more, not only women singers or women vocalists like Alexis, but you're seeing women guitarists like Diamond Rowe from Tetrarch. And so you're seeing more musicians like, well, you know, instrumentalists who are taking the role and doing what they want to do. So in some ways, I think that things are really improving.
Lena, how important is image in heavy metal? Because I'm looking at the feed on Twitter, and a lot of our followers and listeners right now are tweeting images of Jada Pinkett's band, Wicked Wisdom. And I remember reading in your book, you kind of discuss a little bit about the rise and even the demise of Wicked Wisdom because of Jada's image as a celebrity from her acting roles and her life as a wife of Will Smith. How important does your image play in your success in being, you know, in heavy metal?
Well, it depends on the level. It depends on what metal you're talking about. And probably Ursula would agree with me that, like, for the extreme underground scene, which I'm personally more drawn to than, let's say, the mainstream melodic metal that's out there, I would argue that image is not that important. I still think that obviously a beautiful woman will get attention, but I think that you're finding attractive women musicians in the underground extreme metal scene who are wearing jeans and t-shirts and don't feel like they have to dress or present themselves a certain way on stage. So I think that's why I'm kind of always kind of encouraging women to get into metal, women who are interested in the music and want to be musicians, because in that type of scene, the musical proficiency is so important, the technicality of playing is so important, that most people who are really into metal are going to be more, they're going to pay more attention to how you play and how you sound versus what you're wearing or what you look like. So, you know, that's what I believe anyway. I think that in Jada's case, and this was in the early 2000s now, I think that, you know, this was the question. Are people having a hard time with her because she's a black woman? Is it because she's a celebrity? who she's married to, or maybe the band just sucks. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people felt that it was because of that image. Like, I think one thing about heavy metal is that there's so much resistance to the music and the culture. So many people, it doesn't matter what color you are turning their nose up, saying, oh, my God, you must be on drugs or you're a criminal if you listen to this music. That authenticity, if you're into the scene and you want to be a player in the scene, there has to be a level of authenticity that you're true metalhead. So
right.
Jada, in some ways, had issues because of her background. Some people just felt, oh, she's a Hollywood, she's got money. She can
mm-hmm.
She can pay for a tour bus. She bought herself onto this major tour, which was Ozfest. So because of that level of authenticity was not there with her, that's why she had some of the problems that she had.
Which sucks because, I mean, in my opinion, it's just an artistic expression. Like, she just wanted to do something, you know? She's like, I want to do this. I'm into this. And I want to do it. And regardless of her, you know, status, her celebrity status, I feel like people should have just accepted it. Like, oh, this is what she's
yeah.
doing
well,
now.
And,
that's cool.
And, well,
yeah.
Can I just say this real quick, Ms. Dahl? I just really step in real quick here. It's I find that heavy metal and hip-hop, right, both very male aggressive, like we said about heavy metal. And yet somehow, I just want to put this out there, somehow like a Jada Pinkett in heavy metal is never, whenever certain people want to come into the fold, they're not taken serious unless, I don't know what the street cred requirements are, okay? But someone like Drake, right, a hip-hop artist who was an actor, who lived a very upper middle class life, he was accepted immediately in the hip-hop game because
mm-hmm.
of his skills. So my saying is that you do start to question after the fact. It's like, did Wicked Wisdom have the skills, which they did? Did Jada have enough skills to front a band? I thought she did. But yet and still,
I enjoyed her too.
The community, right, immediately rejected her like a very small baboon heart. Like, get this out of my body. Like, it's just, it rejected her. And I just, like, you know, what is the litmus test here? Like, you know, someone, I cut my hair years ago, okay? I used to have a long curtain of black hair. I can easily get my mother on the line here, and she will corroborate it and be very disgusted that I'm even mentioning this, okay? I wore kilts to school. Okay, I wore Doc Martens. I did the whole nine, right? And yet and still, I would go to Ozfest. I never forget going to Ozfest, and these guys surrounded me and say, hey, this event isn't for you.
Wow.
I looked the part. I mean, like, the whole nine. So how can you tell me that I'm not this or Jada's not this? Or, you know, I just feel that I want a better answer. Not from you. You can't speak to the monolithic group of headbangers out there. But at the same time,
well,
there has to be something a little bit more, you know.
Well, you definitely have a point, because I would say, like, first of all, Drake, I hate Drake. I think he sucks as a hip-hop artist. But, you know, and I think, though, one of the things with Drake is that his father is American. His father's family is entrenched in the music industry. He had connections to get to a certain places where no one else did. And then the fact that he was on a really popular show that was filmed in Toronto, Degrassi, yes, that definitely helped. But he's also a man. He's also light-skinned. He's also, some people would say, he's handsome. So he had that, and they say that in terms of who buys records, it's primarily women. Now, I don't believe that, but I think that by a handsome, light-skinned, black man doing hip-hop, he's going to attract certain women, and women are going to support him. Women are going to buy his albums. Now, with Jada, as a beautiful, beautiful African-American woman, when she was on Ozfest, that woman let her hair go. She had she looked amazing, but she was wild. And that she matched the music, but she wasn't the Hollywood weave-wearing, hair-straighten-wearing girl that most people were used to seeing.
Mm-hmm.
She was
Absolutely.
This crazy chick who was wearing tight leather and growling and sweating, and people were like, what the hell is this? So I think that
fantastic.
As a woman, you know, well, there's also, yeah, it was fantastic, but there's also an issue of respectability politics within the black community, where black women who are in the public eye should be always role models and be seen a certain light to lift the rest of us up, you know, and we're all supposed to be like them. And Jada, unfortunately for Jada, people were looking at her like that. And then when she did Ozfest and did her metal thing, people were like, that's not the little girl that we grew up with. And what the hell is this? So I think that, yes, there's a difference between how men are perceived, like Drake was perceived in hip-hop versus Jada. I completely agree with you. But then when you're talking about black women politics and respectability politics, in terms of how we perceive her as a Hollywood actress, that, I think, came into play.
More so than the metal community.
Well, no, you know what? I think that black people were not having Jada in the metal scene. They were
Screw us.
I'd have to say though that in some ways I wouldn't say there was a level of racism in terms of how Jada was perceived. I think that some white men did not want to see not only a black woman front a metal band, but they didn't want to see an all black metal band. But I also believe, and from what people told me when I asked people, it was really more about class, in terms of this is this Hollywood rich girl.
Okay.
She's not authentic. She's just going out for a summer, and then she's going to do a Hollywood movie. And I think that's what more people had an issue with, which was there was the level of authenticity was not there. But
definitely
there was also a level of racism. There was death threats. There was people threatening that if she played at the next town, they were going to kill her.
Wow.
So that we cannot ignore that. That was a definite problem. But what was interesting to me was that class was a major problem too.
I want to mention that, you know, Lindsay Lohan, for example, put out like a pop album
a while ago,
and you know, people made fun of it a little, but I don't think she got
it a lot
over that. Oh, totally. And you probably should have. I haven't listened to it, but you know, she didn't get death threats over making a pop album. Like she stayed in her right place, per se. You know.
Yeah, but that's a white girl doing white people music.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And that's what I'm saying at. And I think, you know, personally, I wasn't a fan of Wicked Wisdom, but I was of the impression that it was kind of a vanity project, but I didn't really, I don't understand why it irked people so much. Like, people were super upset about it. And I'm like, whoa, you know, there was so much backlash against her, against the band, that you know, made me sort of double take.
Wow. Well, we actually got a caller on the line that's holding. They've been holding a while, so let me just check in to see if they're actually waiting to talk to us. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where are you from? Hello, caller, you're on the air. All right. So those of you that are listening in, I know that when you call in through Skype, it will put you on the call, so just be aware of that. But you can call us to ask questions or have comments, 347-237-4616, or use the hashtag BGM podcast. I wanted to ask about the black community for both Lena and Ursula. How have your black friends and family members reacted to your interest in this genre of music?
Ursula, do you want to take that?
Sure. So I think my family has reacted mostly with confusion. No one's really upset about it, and I think I think they're happy that I'm happy. I've tried to play some songs here and there for my mom, and she's disturbed by them. But my grandmother, of course, you know, she barely understands the genre, but everybody's been very supportive. And I've been very lucky. I grew up in kind of a Motown household, a Motown slash disco slash contemporary pop household. So metal wasn't really on the menu. But as far as, you know, exposure goes, like, my mom was never trying to keep me from metal, which I really appreciate. And as far as friends go, most of my friends were white guys who were into the same thing. Like, I remember this one kid in eighth grade, I had this huge crush on him. He had this big bass, and, you know, he'd teach me, like, little riffs here and there. I didn't have a whole lot of black friends. I had two black female friends who were into metal, which is almost unheard of, but...
That is unheard of. That's awesome.
Yeah, they were definitely... I mean, we played Limp Bizkit at our graduation, which is super dorky.
That's so cute.
I'm just glad that there's no video. But yeah, so, you know, there were a few people here and there that were into it, but I remember when I was in eighth grade and we had a music class, it was literally a bunch of white dudes and then me and my two friends. So, you know, it was a little interesting. But as I've gotten older, I've connected with more black metal fans, and the ribbing about what I listen to has subsided. So I hope that answers your question.
Lena, how about you?
Well, I grew up, like, I was adopted, so my family is white. I grew up in an era where the radio played, you know, a myriad of different genres. Like, it was AM radio way when I was really young. So there was always a different, you know, bunch of music playing back to back. I really got into metal when I was like 8 or 9, and then really got into Judas Priest when I was like 11, 12. And so for me, it was just always something that I loved. But I think that while I'm also a music journalist, I also write about race and cultural identity. So being involved in a black community was always very important to me. And I actually got a lot of flack from my black female friends. I grew up in a very small town, so there was only like 4 black kids at my high school. So most of my friends who were into music were white dudes. And so I was very lucky in some ways to have, you know, some friends to talk about music, but none of my friends, and even to this day, like in Toronto, none of my friends are into metal. So I had a really hard time in terms of wanting to be accepted as a black woman or as a black person, and also being into metal. It was very hurtful, very hard. My friend's parents thought that I was insane, and, you know, some of them thought that because I was adopted that it was my parents' fault. I had boyfriends when I was younger who, you know, said if I didn't listen to reggae or soca, then I was, you know, whitewashed and this, that, you know, tried to force me to do certain things like go to reggae shows and Calypso and all that stuff, and I, you know, I wasn't really interested in the music. I didn't grow up with it. So it was always very hard, but for me personally is because I wanted to belong in a black community. I wanted to find that family, and I found very early on in my life that I was never going to be accepted. And even as a grown-ass woman, which I am now, I'm going to tell you my age, but I still struggle with that. It still bothers me. A lot of my black adult friends, like, they're just, no one's into metal, and they just, and I think my good friends will accept what I do and who I am, and they take me on face value, but there's still a lot of resistance in terms of, you know, this book coming out and being supportive. So one of the best things about this book is that I have met a lot of Black women and men who are into metal. Unfortunately, the majority of them live in the States, and I live in Canada, but I have built a community of like-minded folks that, you know, I can talk about music with, or we can, like, two of my homegirls and I were going to Maryland Death Fest in a couple of weeks, and then that's going to be insane. So I have built that over time as an adult, but it was tough growing up. It was very, very tough, and I still, you know, for my own personal issues, I still find it disheartening that there's so much stigma about not being in love with Black-centric music, that you have to, and also this relationship we have with music and how it shapes our cultural identity and our legitimacy as Black people.
Mm-hmm. About that.
We have a question on Twitter, real quick. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to bring this out here. Geek Soul Brother asks, are Black women more accepted in Europe, and did the original punk scene include people of African descent?
I would say in the original punk scene in England had more – well, first of all, I think overall in punk, there's always been more people of color. Always. I mean, you can look at the early, the DC punk scene, the hardcore scene. You can look at what was going on in New York, LA, and also in England. And then if you want to get way back, if you're talking about the skinhead movement in England, it came out of Jamaican communities. So in some ways, yes, there's always been more people of color involved in the punk scene. And I think part of that has to do with the politics involved. With the relationship that punk music had with kind of, the anarchist movement, and I guess you could even say more socialist, anti-capitalist philosophy that came out of this young generation of kids who were looking at their government going, what the hell? And I think that there was more allegiances or acceptance of people of color back in the day. But that scene also has its own issues, so I'm not going to wax romantic about it, but I would say definitely there are more people of color historically in the punk scene. And what was the second question?
Are Black women in metal more accepted in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, from what I've heard, yes, and maybe Ursula would know more about this too, but from the women I interviewed, it's not even about metal. Well, okay, you have skin from Skunk Anansie, and mm-hmm. So some people would, I mean, there's been some arguments whether she's metal per se, but she's definitely hard rock, alternative, like with punk, with a punk philosophy, and their band, like, it's very hard for them to get a gig in the United States or Canada. And that was something that I actually talked to her about when I interviewed her for the foreword of the book. It's always been very hard for her to be accepted as a musician in the scene in North America, but yet in Europe, those guys are very, very popular. They go to Italy, Germany, you know, all over the place. They found it a lot easier to get their band out there in Europe. Tamar Kali, Holla Girl, she's from Brooklyn. She also gets fantastic, wonderful opportunities in Europe. Sandra St. Victor from The Family Stand is now living in Europe. They have also said that it's a lot easier to get gigs, to get acceptance, to get paid properly, and to get respect in Europe. Yeah.
I feel like that's kind of history repeating itself, right? Because Josephine Baker would go to France, for example, where
right.
people
mm-hmm.
were more accepting.
Yeah.
And American audiences didn't want to give any time of day.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I mean, it's weird. It's weird. I think there's a romanticization in terms of African Americans in Europe. I think that especially the Black women are romanticized in a certain way. But, yeah, I mean, Nina Simone moved to Europe. Even a lot of the male, some of the male performers sounded easier in Europe. But, yeah, I mean, a lot of women are saying that, as the women that I spoke to, that it has been a little easier to get gigs in Europe, that the people, and when they have a gig, like, people come out and they're treated like royalty. They're very well respected. But it's just a really unfortunate that in North America, they're not getting that level of respect.
Do you guys think that there's a double standard when it comes to crossing over in music? So you see that there's a lot of artists, white artists, that cross over to hip-hop music and become commercially successful, like the Eminems of the world and even maybe the Robin Thickes of the world. But yet, when it comes to blacks crossing over in rock music, it doesn't seem like it's embraced or we don't get the kind of commercial success that white artists do. Can you guys speak to that a little bit, why that is?
I mean, the fact that anybody still knows who Madis Yahu is just proof positive that there's a double standard, you know? Like, I feel like white artists have been encroaching on traditionally black territory forever, and I'm talking literally, you know, imperialistically, and also within our music. So there's definitely a double standard. I mean, Eminem is not, I wouldn't say that Eminem is a bad rapper, but I feel like he does get a lot of exposure, a lot more exposure than just about any black alternative rocker or metaler, you know. I used alternative rocker as an example because I think alternative rock is a bit more popular than metal, a bit more mainstream. But, yeah, I think that's been the case for as long as I can remember, this double standard existing.
Yeah, like, I think there's a historical legacy where, I mean, if you want to go back to Elvis, you know, where in terms of Hound Dog, where the woman that originally sang the song,
Big Mama Thornton.
Exactly. And then, but, you know, when Elvis Presley did it, they were able to market it to a wider audience. He made a fortune. She got nothing. You know, so there is this historical aspect to racial co-optation of music. You know, recently I was at South by Southwest this year, and my friend, actually Militia, from Judas Priestess, we were walking down the street, and there was like, I think it was like Vice magazine or Pitchfork. They had this huge outdoor stage, and there was thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And we were walking by, and it was Macklemore, that white rapper from Seattle, and he was performing. And it was interesting. So he, like, we were standing out and we were walking by, and then the show stopped. And I noticed, like, it was like maybe like 95% white people who had gone to see this white rapper perform. And I just thought to myself, I think that is one of the key, is that white people will like black-centric music, but they feel more comfortable when a white person is performing it. And if you think about who's buying albums and how much, you know, who's supporting, who's going to spend $100 to go see a rapper, is white folk.
Right.
And so you put a white rapper, and they will emulate black folk, and white people love that shit. And they won't pay for it, and that's why. So I think that, and it was funny because Macklemore, he was just, I read an article, an interview with him in Rolling Stone, and it was hilarious because, like, it was like 3,000 words, and maybe 250 words, they said, oh, he is pondering why he's so popular when some of his black colleagues aren't doing so well. And he wondered if it was because he was white. Motherfucker knows he was white. Like, let's be real. Okay? So, yeah, it is. And I think that, you know, black communities, one thing, though, I don't want to just blame white folk. You know, I love white people. But I think that we also have to remember that Black people, there's a real stigma in terms of what is seen as cultural authenticity and what is perceived as Black. If they see a black girl doing what they think is white people's music, it's a slap in the face. And they're like, oh, she doesn't want to be one of us anymore. She thinks she better, blah, 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 blah. And we have all these, our own issues wrapped around seeing Black people perform historically not really Black music, even though we all know where rock and roll came from. But it's amazing to this day, you know, it's amazing to this day how I will get a comment from somebody who wants to question my allegiance to my people because of what I do for a living. We still have that issue within our communities to deal with about what is really Black and how we judge each other on superficial, stupid things instead of getting to know who we are as individuals.
Exactly. Amen to that.
Sure.
Geek Soulfutter asks, do Black men in metal support Black women in metal, or do they treat everybody the same all around?
I don't know, Ursula.
I'm a Black guy. I'm a Black guy, and I'm going to be very honest with you that it was something that I never checked for. You know, like, I'm not that guy that's scrounging around in the trash looking for that hot indie band that's going to, like, I'm not that guy. You know what I mean? So there were a lot of small bands with these, you know, Black female musicians that I never heard about, right? And then if I go to a show and I hear about it, I'm like, yo, they're good. Then I'm checking for it, but it's not like I'm, like, exclusively, you know, trying to find these people or discredit them when they come out, you know, because you have to understand when you're Black, you're already ostracized, so you know what it's like to be rejected, you know. So I don't think that that's something that I'm speaking for myself, and I'm looking at a lot of the people here on Twitter as well, and I think that a lot of the Black men can definitely attest that they don't, you know, say, oh, no, a Black girl doing heavy metal. I'm sorry to say this, but I think that's really an exclusively to a white guy kind of thing. I really think that thing doesn't really wholly, like, it's something that you can assign to us. But that's just my humble opinion. And now you ladies, go forth and yak it up.
I wouldn't say that it is a white guy thing exclusively, but I do think that it is a white person thing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think about my Black male metalhead friends. I do not have very many, disclaimer. But I don't think that they necessarily are thinking about who to push and who not to push. Like, they're just kind of liking what they like. And I think that that's a pretty common sentiment. I don't know what you've experienced, Lena. So.
Well, yeah, no, I kind of agree because I think that, like, I interviewed Dallas Coyle, who was the guitarist in God Forbid, and he was amazing. He's an amazing guy, and he's doing his own thing right now. But I asked him because I wanted to get his perspective as a Black metal, male metal musician. Like, what is, you know, what's going on out there and what is he observing? And I think that he in particular, him and his brother, and also the other members in God Forbid, I think that they would be very supportive of Black women. I think it comes down to if the quality is there, if they're talented. They're not just going to support someone simply because they're Black. They're going to support someone if they're good. But I think if they're a Black woman and they said if they can give them a little bit of a push and say and hype them, they would, but they're only going to do it if that musician is worth it. And I think that's pretty across the board. I think that it is easier for there's way more Black men into the metal scene as musicians than there is Black women. I think it's in some ways it's more accepted because they are men, but
right.
I also know that they have their own issues to deal with. I've heard from especially older men in their 40s and 50s who are in metal bands across the states who have, like, sent me messages about some of their experiences, and it's not pleasant either. But I think that I think that's what people think, though, like generally, oh, if you're a black man into metal, you're going to be repping the white girls, right? And that's probably the case for some, but I do think that generally they would, you know, black men in the scene would support a black woman if they're coming up or, you know, their band is starting out, but they'd have to be good. No one's a fool. They're not going to just say, it's like I just saw on Twitter someone was talking about Lil Wayne when he picked up a guitar. Like, no one in their right mind is going to recommend Lil Wayne during his rock phase because Lil Wayne sucks, right?
Right.
And this is the thing. It's like, yes, you're black, but more importantly, especially in metal, you have to know how to play. You have to be talented. You have to take it seriously, and you have to know how to perform. So it's really, I don't really think anyone's just going to give you the hookup simply because you share the same skin color.
Right, right. We got a couple of callers that are waiting, so I'm going to go ahead and bring on the first one. Hopefully they'll connect here with us. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and where you're from?
Who is it, me?
Yes, you're on the air with Black Girl Nerds.
Okay, this is Mashadi, and I'm calling from Atlanta,
hey,
Georgia.
Girl.
Hi, Lena.
Girl.
I am loving this conversation, but I don't want this one thing to get lost. I think it is so powerful thinking about these different genres of heavy metal music as an avenue for a particular kind of, you know, black female subjectivity or, you know, black female identity. So, I mean, it's not through Erykah Badu, right, or Jill Scott, not soul, not rap, not R&B, but heavy metal music in spite of everything. Can you say a little bit more about the power of black women sort of finding some kind of pleasure in heavy metal music?
Good one.
Great question.
Well, I just wanted to start because, first of all, Mashadi was actually interviewed for What Are You Doing Here?
Oh.
She is in the book. She's a very, very good friend of mine, and she actually is doing her dissertation on black women guitarists. So she does raise at Emory University, holla girl. She does raise a really interesting point because this is the main thing, is that women who perform this music, it is a way for them to express themselves in ways that they cannot do performing another type of music. So it's the anger, it's the energy, it's getting out that frustration, it's wanting to pump your fist, it's doing all those things that within our society, black women, but especially black women, are told to suppress. We know what it's like when someone calls us an angry black woman. We know what it's like when someone calls us aggressive or assertive. But by listening to this music, by letting the music channel, it actually has let the women that I interviewed and a lot of the women that I've spoken to who are into the scene, it lets them really be able to express those emotions that society has told us we are not supposed to. Or if we do, we will be in trouble. So it really serves to be this cathartic way of letting your individuality out. It's allowed of getting your anger out, all those things that especially as black women we are told that is not acceptable in our society. Just like I always equate it to like what the white boys do, like when we saw the white dudes in 1980s with their leather jackets and their long hair, and they go and they drink their PBR and, you know, do whatever, like they're doing the same thing that we are doing. You know, they have been allowed to do that to that music, but now it's time for black women to be able to do it too.
And frankly, we need it. I need to headbang
exactly.
some of my anger out sometimes.
That is the thing. That is the most important thing. Too many of my girlfriends growing up were depressed, were suffering from sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse, really depressed. They were taking drugs. They were being promiscuous. And one of the reasons why I wrote this book was because I wanted to say, I'm not saying if they listened to heavy metal, would everything be okay? But they needed that emotional outlet. They
right.
needed an outlet to get angry and to express their pain. But so it's really interesting now how we're able to see this generation of young black women who are using metal for those reasons.
And one of the things, and I think John Minas mentioned this on Twitter, that sort of causes black people to be a little bit hesitant in embracing this music is there's been sort of this stigma attached to heavy metal being very racist, and somehow, you know, if you decide to go to these heavy metal concerts that you'll be judged and you know, that violence could ensue. Just all of these sort of preconceived notions about heavy metal and racism. What would you say to those kind of discussions?
Ursula, do you want to take that one?
Sure. So I would say to anybody who's worried about a racist atmosphere, I feel like there are a lot more people of color at metal shows than anybody necessarily thinks. You know, I think we still, even though it's 2013 now, I think we still have pictures in our head of, like, 1983 Metallica shows where there's, like, maybe one black guy standing in a corner somewhere. And, you know, it's just like a bunch of rowdy, drunk white kids, when that's really not the case. And, of course, you know, it depends. I actually went to a show where I was the only black woman recently. It was like, I think it was like late 2012. But, you know, it's not the same, you know, stuff is constantly evolving. So it's not going to be that kind of environment wherever you go. And if it is that way, it might not, you know, maybe I'm ignorant because I live in New York City and I go to local shows and I go to not so local shows, but I've never really encountered any sort of environment where I felt that the atmosphere was so racist that I just couldn't be there for some reason.
Yeah. I think growing up in Canada, I agree to a point. I think it really depends on where you live and the city that you live in. I think that depending on the demographics, the cultural demographics of the city would really depend on your, like, how, you know, how that dynamic is within the scene. I've certainly experienced a lot of racism in the scene, and actually I noticed, like, I've been going to shows for over 20 years, and I noticed, like, probably in the last decade it's actually gotten worse. But I think the worst show I went to was definitely in Montreal. I had to cover a two-day metal festival, and it was just totally insane. Like, you have French people screaming at you. you're like, I don't know what they're saying to me, but I know they want to kill me because they're shaking their fists at me. Like, it was just like, I tell this story because I was terrified. And I actually had to, like, calm myself down and go, should I leave? You know, like, I didn't feel, at one point, I just didn't feel safe. Because out of, like, I think at one point, there was probably 25,000 people there. And there was, you know, maybe, I barely saw any people of color there at all. So it was not a great experience. The women that I interviewed for the book, they shared some of their experiences, which were horrific. And that really, it really bothered me in terms of what these girls were going through in where they were, you know, in the areas where they lived. But as, you know, Ursula says, you can't think that this is not the 1980s Metallica show. I think that no one should really be deterred by going to a metal show. I think that unfortunately there are racists wherever you go, and there will be people who might verbally or let you know that you are not accepted there. But really, I think depending on the show too, like, I go to a lot of extreme, like, underground metal shows, and I find that if your ass shows up in the show, people are going to know that you should be there. You know, like, people are not going to really harass you because they know that if you weren't really into it, you wouldn't be there. So I think that it shouldn't be
a
hindrance
point.
To anyone. Yeah, you know, it shouldn't be a hindrance to anyone. But on the other hand, like, let's not get it twisted in terms of the outside world and what goes on in the outside world still permeates the walls of the club, so you still are going to occasionally get somebody who's going to throw you some shade. And also, let's also remember that just because women are there, like women who are not black, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to save your ass either, because they can be just as racist or even worse
yeah.
than the men.
Yeah.
Okay?
Definitely.
That's
I wasn't trying to imply that racism was not a thing, because it so is. And I've definitely gotten the side eye at more than a few shows. But threats of violence, not as much. And even so, I probably would still go to shows, to be honest.
And so would I, yeah.
It's funny because, like, you know, you're talking to a guy that's gone to shows all over this country. I've never gone to an actual show in Europe when I was in Europe, but it's funny. I'll never forget this one incident. I think we went to see Metallica, and I think Suicidal Tendencies had opened, right? And so my brother is in the back in Chicago at the amphitheater. There's a grass hill, and I think a lot of them have those. If everyone else out there knows, they can definitely tweet, or you guys can say something about it. And he's in the pit. And my brother at the time, I kid you not, the kid was 13 years old. He was about 5'9 at the time. And he's in the pit. And I don't know how it happened. My brother is in handcuffs and being taken out. And I'm like, what? And it was like, what's going on? Like, I had to talk like I've never talked before in my life. Because for whatever reason, he was singled out as being too violent in the pit. He didn't swing. He didn't punch anyone in the face. And I've seen guys go to town on each other. And yet, it's just that type of feeling sometimes when you go to shows that, like, they'll let you go. Like, I always feel like, oh, yeah, you can attend. But, you know what I mean? Like you said, sit in the corner. And I've felt that way sometimes. You know, and I didn't grow up going to shows in the 80s. I started going to a lot of shows in the 90s because of my age. But at the same time, it's just, you know, some shows in certain areas are better than others. And you get embraced. Mm-hmm. And people are excited that you're there. And then, especially when you can go back and forth with albums and who became this guitarist after this guy left. And when you know that stuff, they're buying you beers, and it can be a really great time. And then sometimes, you know, it can be, hey, Darkie, go ahead and hit the back. You know, like, I've had that happen. So it's a regional thing, like you said, Ms. Dawes, I believe you said that was one of your opening statements. And it's kind of hit or miss sometimes for a black guy, because a lot of people, you guys may not have said, are kind of threatened by black guys that are like 60 and 220 pounds. Like this guy here, and man, it gets kind of like, I know, I just wanted to put some stats out there to all the listeners. BGN 510, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that a lot of it isn't. I wouldn't recommend this, but I also find that sometimes somebody will try and step to you, and I find that if I show them that I will, like, I'm not going to take their shit, they will back right down. And unfortunately, it shouldn't have to come to the point where you're almost in fisticuffs with somebody. But a couple of times I've had to give people at least the look. Like, really? You want to go there with me? And they will back right down. Because they think, you know, if you walk in, like, especially if I'm working, if I'm reviewing a show or I'm going to shoot a show, sometimes I go in, I'm there the whole night by myself. And I'm working. And so occasionally somebody will try and intimidate you because they think, oh, she's by herself and, you know, she's going to be scared because she doesn't have anyone. And I'm just like, look, I'm too old for this shit. Like, I'm just too old for this shit. You know, and, like, sometimes you need to show people that you will beat them.
Whoa.
And then they will. Okay. And they're just trying to test. They're just trying to test you. I think they're just trying to test you, and they're trying to intimidate you. So don't show them that you can be intimidated.
Right.
And especially,
can we call
again,
you?
I think.
Go ahead. I just want to call you the heavy metal whisperer. It's like you have these great tips for the colored man in the world of heavy metal. I love it. Let's keep it going.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately, it's this, you know, that's just, unfortunately, you have to do that sometimes, because people will try, because that's what they think, oh, she's the only black girl here, or she's the only black guy here, I'm going to try and mess with her, and then just show them that you're not going to take it, and unfortunately, you know, that's what you have to do sometimes.
I wanted to kind of go back to what was being said about, like encounters at shows where you meet somebody and you throw bands back and forth and then people are buying each other drinks and stuff like that. Like, that is a very manly thing to enjoy. And not to say that I don't like being bought drinks and talking about bands, but I find that as a woman, you're very much expected to prove yourself, and especially as a black woman, you know, there's a lot of, there are a lot of people checking you, you know, on the level of, you know, physicality, like Lena was saying, and, you know, how you have to give people a look sometimes, but then there's also people who will ask you about the band that's headlining, like you've never heard of them, you know?
Yeah.
Which is really baffling, because, I mean, you're there for a reason, right? And you're not a merch girl, and you're not, you know, you're not somebody's girlfriend. And, you know, if you are, then whatever, that's fine too. But I know I'm not. If I'm sitting in the audience, you know, you should expect me to be watching the show, right? But I feel like that expectation is not there, and I've definitely had guys get really weird about that kind of thing, where, like, I mention, like, an album of a supporting band that night, and then they're like, oh, wow, you really know your shit, you know, let me buy you a PBR, and I'm just like, really? You know, I'll take the free drink, but you're saying to me that, like, you expected nothing of me when I paid for my ticket, and I'm here headbanging with you. You know, it's a very strange sort of, it's like a backhanded compliment, like, oh, good for you, you know stuff.
Yes. Yes.
So, like, as a guy, that probably would not happen for me. And as a guy, I can imagine that it's easier for you to enjoy that kind of rapport with somebody at a show.
I think there was one time I was in Austin and I went to see this band Death. The black punk band Death, not Death from Florida, but and it was interesting because it was the first show that they'd done in years, you know, and it was a big thing, and these guys are probably in their late 50s now, and I was going through the crowd and this white girl tapped me on the shoulder and she looked at me and she goes, "You must be so proud." And I just walked away shaking my head like, what is she on crack? Like, what the hell is she talking about? So you do get these weird, like, condescending comments from people. And I don't get that too much anymore, but I do get the occasional, like, the quizzes. And I just say, why would I be here? Do you think I just got lost and walked, you know, happened to walk into this metal bar? Like, you know,
yeah, like,
really,
I don't think
but, I
people
mean,
understand
really?
Like how
no,
inconvenient it is to get into a show sometimes.
Yeah, especially like, you know, it is, especially if, you know, depending on where the show is, if the show is sold out or, you know, whatever. But I think that, like, yeah, there's a real level of insecurity with some people in terms of seeing you there, and then so they have to quiz you. Oh, how much do you know about this? And I'm always very honest. I know what I know, and I don't know what I don't know. And I'm always very honest because I'm like, I'm not going to prove to you anything. I just, unless you're paying my rent. Yeah, you know, like, or you bought my ticket. I ain't proven nothing to you, you know. But that is a really annoying problem.
Well, we got another caller that just called in, so Give me one moment. I'll bring them on the air. Caller, what's your name and where are you from?
Hey, this is Geek Soul Brother.
Hey.
Hello.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Good. What you got to add tonight?
I want to know, one, where do you guys think black women and black people in general in heavy metal, like, what's the direction that they're going to take? Or, you know, like, if there is any direction, like, as more black people get into heavy metal, do you think that they're going to take it in another direction? Or, you know, is heavy metal going to change because of the multiculturalism or something like that?
That seems kind of impossible to answer. It's a good question. I think that everybody brings their own cultural experiences to metal. For example, Control, you know, brings Finnish folk metal or folk music into metal. I think that, you know, there's also a band called Miras who are, I do not remember where they're from. I think Israel, but don't quote me on that. They're from the Middle East somewhere, and they incorporate Middle Eastern musical elements into their stuff. So I think that in this, I feel like everybody, regardless of race, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of nationality, they're going to bring whatever. I'm trying to not do my voice.
Geek Soul Brother, are you on a speakerphone?
No, but I'm on my cell phone.
Oh, okay.
And I might be too close to the computer.
That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Turn your radio down.
Yeah, you might want to mute your computer.
I think that, I think that what you're seeing now is that, like, young black, like, the black kids I know that are, you know, in metal bands, up-and-coming metal bands, they seem to be just doing what they're influenced by. So, again, like, Diamond Rowe from Tedderark, who's a guitarist, it's funny because she's 23, and, she, you know, she's really, really young, and she grew up on Trivium and Suicide Silence and kind of these metalcore bands that are more well-known. And so those are her influences. And she also is a huge Metallica fan. So Metallica is going to play an influence in how she plays or what she wants to do. And she's an incredible, incredible guitarist. So she's picking up on those bands that she grew up on, that she listens to, that inspire her as a musician. And then you have, there's a girl, I can't remember her name. She's from Diary of Destruction, and they're from France. They're a death metal band from France, and she's the vocalist. And she is, it's just what kids are listening to and what they're inspired by. I think right now it's just simply about playing the music that they want to play versus
right.
bringing any of their, you know, it's more of a, I think it's more of a regional thing, as Ursula said, in terms of there's a lot of European bands, or if you want to look at black metal, the bands from Norway, where are really bringing in kind of indigenous music to their culture into the music. And that's something that's been a mainstay within certain threads of black metal. So it really more depends on, you know, maybe where you're from and the music, the indigenous music of that country versus bringing in any kind of more overt black-centric musical forms into the metal scene.
Right.
I'm sorry. Can everybody hear me?
Yeah. You're back
on.
Okay. Oh, good. Thank you.
No, that's cool. I was wondering if there was some cultural influences that came into metal from, you know, different groups and stuff, and in particular black people, of course. And, I have my son who's also he's in a metal band, of course, and I mentioned to Jamie before, I think she saw a picture of him before, but he's in a metal band, and we were kind of talking about, you know, he doesn't see any black women in a lot of the metal bands he comes across, you know, in the Northeast in America. So it is a rare thing. It's definitely a rare thing.
Well, I think you're going to see, like, I mean, I'm not saying that there's a lot in general, but there are women out there. There's a lot, I mean, there's more women than, like, since the book has come out, I found, you know, three or four more bands or artists than I knew when I was working on the book.
Right.
So there's definitely women out there. But, again, it's not easy to tour, as your son probably knows. So
right.
It's also like getting over the hump of, let's say, okay, I put a band together, we put a EP out or a single or whatever. It's also a matter of getting out there and touring. There's a band called There's a band out of Brooklyn. I think the woman's name is Madame St. Beatrice.
Mm-hmm.
This band that's coming out, that just came out in Brooklyn, I'll have to, anybody who's interested, they can tweet me at Lena D and I'll let them know. My mind just went totally blank. But I know they're touring. They've been touring all year. But, again, it's very few and far between. Like, Ted Rock is going to be touring this spring in the States. So they're slowly getting out there. But I think also just one other thing about black, if you look at, you know, obviously Black Sabbath, a lot of the doom stoner bands that are out there now, they have been very influenced by African-American music. You can hear a lot of the blues influence in a lot of doom, more of the doom stoner bands right now. So, you know, it's funny how even though nobody will really admit it in some ways, you know, the African-American blues music has played an integral part in the history of heavy metal.
And pretty much just about every
and
music.
And basically everything else,
genre. Yeah. Okay, cool. Did you want to ask a question? I got my son here. He don't know what to ask.
I don't think
he knows. He probably has answers, but he doesn't know what to ask.
Oh.
Well, thank you, ladies. This is an awesome show. I really appreciate it. I'm a hang up and listen on the computer again.
All right.
Awesome.
Thanks for calling in.
Great show, Jamie.
All right.
Take care.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask, which it's kind of funny too, obviously getting prepped for this show, I wanted to get people amped up to get ready to listen in what we were going to discuss about heavy metal music. And I put out a tweet asking all of the followers, you know, what's your favorite heavy metal band? And a lot of people tweeted back and said bands like Red Hot Chili Peppers and Third Eye Blind and 311. And I'm like, okay, that's not really metal, but all right. So maybe you guys, y'all are the experts. Can you give us sort of what the distinction is between metal and alternative rock? Because some people might not know that there's a difference.
I mean, it's apples and oranges, really.
Hmm.
I mean,
is it kind of like a Venn diagram where there's just like layer upon layer and you're more ambiguous than a distinct sound?
It's not even ambiguous. Like, it's one of those things that, like, when you hear it, you know. And I'm sure that somebody who's more technically interested, like who's more technically maybe even proficient at metal music would know more about how to explain that. But it's, I mean, I'm a fan and a journalist, so I can only describe it in these abstract terms like intensity, you know, which is not necessarily helpful. So,
I mean, there's so many different levels of metal within metal. There's so many different subgenres and variations of what is constituted, what is thought of as metal music. I mean, I'm listening to, there's a great band I'm listening to right now called Lesbian, and they're from Seattle, I believe. And they're really more, it's more, well, it's very progressive. I mean, it's such a mishmash of different musical genres, but it's got their heavy elements. I mean, yeah, I mean, as Ursula said, you can get into the technical issues, like some people will say, you know, there's got to be, you know, a certain drum kick, or there's got to be certain riffage or tonality to how your guitar or your bass is tuned. But really, it really is apples and oranges, and it really is not that easy to explain. I think 311, it's hilarious. Like, sorry, it's a beautiful 311. I was just like, I saw that on Twitter. I'm like, really? Really? Like, you know, but I mean, yeah, I mean, it's like, I mean, I think that people get wrapped up in terms of looking at heavy metal by, they look at what the people look like, if their hair or they've got tattoos, or the pace is a little faster. I mean, I think people, if you really want to know what, you know, what good examples are, go on to Hear Evil, you know, just like check us out after the show, and we can certainly show you what the different variations are or what it actually is. But I almost would want to say that anything that is not played on the radio is metal, you know, or if you want to listen to a serious radio station, Roots Bloody Roots, Sirius XM, there's lots of, like, shows that are dedicated towards metal. And they'll even play more mainstream stuff that you might have perhaps seen a video on VH1, which I doubt. But, you know, but I mean, you know, there's certain ways of figuring out what is and what isn't.
I mean, there's definitely been, I mean, I remember when I was a kid that you know, they played, like, For Whom the Bell Tolls by Metallica, for example, on K-Rock.
Mm-hmm.
They would play Pantera every once in a while. So
mm-hmm.
I don't, and I mean, that's certainly metal, as far as I'm concerned. And so it's hard so it's hard to even say that whatever's not on the radio is metal. And,
well,
you know,
these days, yeah, but these days, you're not really hearing it on the radio. I mean, if you're listening to a large radio station that's the demographic is supposed to be like a main, you know, regular audience, you're really not going to hear anything that heavy. You might hear the alternative band like 311, or even you might hear the alternative band like maybe the heaviest would be Rage Against the Machine, an oldie, but you're really not going to hear too much Metallica, especially their most recent stuff. You're not really going to hear it on mainstream radio. If you do go to the satellite stations that are specific towards, you know, certain genres, yes, you can maybe listen to 5 or 6 hours, but these days you're just not going to hear it.
Right. Well, can I say for your consideration really quick that we no longer say 311 for the rest of the podcast? Can we put 311 to bed now? I just,
yeah,
thank
yeah.
you. Okay, all
although
right.
Although I do
want to
say that I did have their live CD when I was a child, and I played it a lot, and I loved it.
Okay.
I still kind of do.
You're off the call now. You're off the call. Thank you for coming out, because I warned you, no 311. You had to push me.
All my metal cred.
Awesome. Well, I just want to say thank you guys for calling in and discussing this incredible topic. I think that a lot of the followers and people that, you know, follow Black Girl Nerds got a lot of insight and probably discovered some things that they didn't know and discovered some artists that they never heard of. So thank you, Lena Dawes. Thank you, Ursula. If you haven't done so already, guys, pick up Lena's book. It's awesome. It's called What Are You Here, A Black Woman's Life in Liberation in Heavy Metal. And Ursula, you can reach her through her website, which is hearevil.com. Next week, we will have Black Coders. So we will discuss all things technology with respect to computer programmers, website developers, phone app developers, and more. We're going to have Daphne from Black Female Coders Robert Young, and two coders from blackgirlscode.com. So definitely tune in next week, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't forget to listen to this encore show tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on www.urbansoulradio.fm. And thank you, Ramon and LaTanya, for co-hosting tonight. Appreciate that.
No problem.
Awesome, guys. Thanks for coming out. Appreciate it. Take care, guys.
Great. Thank you guys so much.